2nd from 1 to 5 p.m. Call 605-4745 for more.
This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD Public Radio. And in segment one, my guest will be Dr. Brian Albrecht, who's president here at Gateway Technical College. And as you know, WGTD HD is a service of Gateway Technical College. In segment two, a rebroadcast of an interview I did with Dr. James Ryan, who at the time was a professor at the University of Virginia, and he's now dean of the Graduate School of Education at Harvard. Brian, as always, welcome into our studios.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure to be here, and I'm so proud that Gateway's been able to host WGTD, and I always love the tagline, your gateway to public radio.
That's right.
It's a pleasure to be here.
That's right. Well, thanks so much. Well, first of all, here we are in May, and commencement is coming up, I think, tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, that's correct.
And this, of course, will air on Saturday, just after commencement. First of all, let's talk about this past academic year. And by the way, the lineup for our talk, for our discussion, I should say, we're going to talk about academics on all the campuses, enrollments, budget, growth. And then we'll talk about Foxconn. Obviously,
okay.
All these things are important to all of us who live in the Gateway Technical College District.
Well, you're correct. And, you know, Foxconn by itself has been quite a catalyst for many changes on our campuses with our programs. But not just Foxconn. A lot of great companies are seeing growth, not only with the economic changes that are taking place, but the technology behind it and types of skills that workers are going to need. So Gateway's been providing this service for our community now for 107 years. And we're just as excited today as we were in 1911 about the role that Gateway plays to support a community.
In fact, I remember that you were my guest on Education Matters, and that was the 100th anniversary date of Gateway.
It's hard to believe that that's 7 years ago already. And the time goes fast, and I'm sure the first 100 years went pretty fast for an institution like Gateway. And it's been, I think, one of the most remarkable institutions in the region, not only because of its longevity, but it is one of the very first two-year publicly funded colleges in America, has great history, great roots, and has grown up with our communities. So whether it's in the manufacturing sector, healthcare sector, IT sector, just all of the different support services that make our communities so successful, many of it can be contributed to the type of workers that we're able to provide here in Southeast Wisconsin.
Sure. Let's first talk about this current academic year. What has our 2017-2018 academic year looked like as far as all the campuses here at Gateway?
Let me first give a big shout out to all of our students who, as you mentioned, will be graduating tomorrow. 1,100 students will be walking across a stage at somewhere across the Gateway campus, and we actually have 9 different graduation ceremonies, but the commencement for the associate degrees is always the largest event, and we'll have close to 400 students walking across the stage for that. But it's pretty remarkable when you think about the impact that our students have throughout the community and the careers that they train for. We've had a great year. Remarkable success of our students, whether they're competing in their national and international competitions or just providing great community service with the volunteerism that they do on campus. And all of that, of course, is directed, led, guided, and mentored by an outstanding faculty who are committed and engaged in helping all students achieve success. This year alone, Steve, Gateway Technical College has provided over 6,000 high school students with dual credit, the largest number in the state and the largest probably that I've seen across the country. That means that high school students are taking college credits while they're in high school, saving their families the tuition dollars, and they can be redeployed in other areas of need within their family structure. And more importantly, giving students an experience about what college and careers are all about. And hopefully many of those will transition directly to Gateway and will be able to sustain their educational pathway. So dual credit with high schools. We opened a great partnership with Racine Unified this last year in the Academy. We now host the Real School over at the IMET Center. Expanded partnerships over at Lakeview as we engage in that level as well. And in relationship to the business community, extended a brand new training partnership with Wisconsin Oven, reinforced our partnerships with Case New Holland and Sinkerator, SC Johnson. Of course, added the new Foxconn partnership to the Gateway portfolio. We are working closely with Haribo as they begin to build out their new operations in the Kenosha community. Kennall Manufacturing has been a strong supporter of Gateway. We have two full-time faculty there and opened up a new classroom at Amazon. So our business community, very engaged. Our student community, very engaged at K-12 and post-secondary. Each of the campuses has seen remarkable renovations again as we continue to build out the facilities to create a positive learning environment. And I look at what we're doing out on the Elkhorn campus with the new Vet Tech program and the new RPM Center for Advanced Manufacturing. And we made a commitment this year to add additional classrooms to that campus and kind of create additional places for people to learn. The Racine campus, our student services, got a complete remake last year, and we added some additional programming there, including office space for our Gateway Promise program, which is our affordability initiative here at the college. And now we have over 350 students in the Gateway Promise program, so that's a real strong aspect of our work. And then, of course, right here in Kenosha, every time I walk through campus, it changes. The building where the radio station is, now the Inspire Center, mm-hmm. that was all brand new, and it focuses on human-patient simulation, and our Law Enforcement Protective Services Training Center is state-of-the-art, being used by officers from all over the region. And it's inspiring for me to go through our facilities and see what we have and to watch our faculty engage with our business partners and then to see the results, the students that not only will graduate but will continue to their lifelong journey here at Gateway.
Mm-hmm. I know we talked about this before, but when you took over as president and when you look at how many years has it been now?
This is my 15th year at Gateway.
Wow.
A little 13 and a half as a president. I was here just a little bit before that as a vice president.
So when you look at those changes over the 15 years, but in particular the 13 and a half years since you've been president, I know one of the quotes, and we'll talk about the Foxconn broadens talent network with a challenge that was in the Kenosha News recently about Smart City.
Right.
And I noticed one of the references was Back to the Future. And when you think about what Gateway was like when you took over as president, and it was thriving, it was growing, and just give a sense of what it was then and what it is now.
Yeah, well, night and day different. If you remember, several years ago, 2008, 2009, you had a big economic crisis, and a lot of people were losing their jobs, and companies were moving out, and a lot of offshoring of skills and so on. And Gateway was here to help support our community. We did a lot of retraining of workers that needed to get new skills to kind of advance into different types of careers. So really proud of Gateway's effort to make sure that we were viable and really aggressive in helping the retraining. To today, where the economy is very strong and unemployment's below 3%, and we're looking at how can we reach into our community at new levels and enhance our English language learners, our GED programs, and make sure that our citizens have a connection to the types of jobs that are moving to our community. The challenge is that the jobs have changed so much. So advanced manufacturing today is completely different than it was even 10 years ago. It's all built around automation, robotics, and the integration of IT. In fact, IT, information technology, is all built around cybersecurity and protecting databases. Mm-hmm. And so it's very different today. And yet Gateway's been able to respond, whether it's a challenged economy or a thriving economy.
So when we look now at our enrollments at Gateway, and also when you look at the budget and the type of state support, give us an overview of how things look right now and what you are looking at for next year as you look at enrollments as well as the budget.
Well, I'd be happy to. So just in general, technical colleges, including Gateway, are funded under a three-prong approach. So the first area, of course, is what students pay in their tuition and fees, and that tuition value is set by a state committee and then approved by the state board. So approximately $134 a college credit that's issued by the state. So whether you're in Milwaukee, in Racine, Kenosha, or Superior, any technical college has the state same tuition rate that goes along with it. So that's about a third of our funding. Another third of our funding comes from the local property tax. So that's where each of us receive a tax bill and we see Gateway Technical College mm-hmm. on there. And that's based on the value of your home, so how much property you own. And that approximately represents a third of our budget. Now, a few years ago, it represented a lot more. But under Governor Walker's initiative to hold down tuition rates and to make college more affordable, he changed the model and put more state funding into the formula, which reduced a little bit of the local property tax and gave some property tax relief. So now a third of our funding comes from the state, and some of that is based on performance. And so where Gateway has seen an increase in funding, it's been on the performance side, serving more students, being able to address certain areas of need, whether it's a GED initiative or dual credit enrollment for the high schools, like I mentioned. We're very strong in those outcomes models. So three corners of this success model: working with the state for reimbursement on number of people served in high quality, working with our community to keep property taxes low, but investing that in ways that we can grow the types of job markets, and attracting students to be able to pay the tuition to take those jobs. So we look for growth. We look for this year, we have an increase of 4.5% with enrollment right now. That means we're going to receive more state funding and more student revenue funding, and we're able to balance all of that with expanded programs. So we're adding several new programs to help accommodate the changes that we know are happening in our community, including advanced manufacturing, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But we added a new high-performance engine program with BRP as a partner, and a new barber cosmetology program with Andes as a partner. So we are continuing to grow our programs to attract more students to be able to generate revenues in order to keep that property tax down.
Mm-hmm. As you look at growth, as you look at the increases in student enrollment, and then also looking at Gateway's involvement with Foxconn, how does sustainability play into all this? Because people, obviously, we are all concerned about sustainability and the environment and the environmental impact that everything has on the world, certainly. But here in this area, how does Gateway deal with sustainability?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I'm really proud of our effort. We signed on in 2009 to the President's Climate Commitment. So at Gateway, we measure our carbon footprint. When we do remodeling, we recycle, and we try to find ways to ensure that our buildings are as efficient as possible. And in fact, this year, Steve, I don't know if you even know this, but Gateway was recognized as the Green Ribbon College for the state of Wisconsin. So we had the highest award for our effort in sustainability. And we'll be entered into a national competition here in a couple of months. But it goes back to our philosophy, our mission, our focus. You know, we have the Center for Sustainable Living. We have a Green Scholars Program for our students. We have great programs in renewable energy. We demonstrated on campus with our rain gardens and our wind turbines, and really try to instill the idea that a technical field still has a social responsibility to protect the environment. We can do that in many ways: building automation control systems, using human patient simulators to reduce the impact on our environment, and a lot of different ways. When it comes to our corporate partnerships and sustainability, many of our partners, in fact, I think all of them, have the same type of value stream that we do. SC Johnson is really focused on sustainability. And, you know, I look at Kenall Manufacturing and LED Lighting and Cree, and it's all focused on how do we create greater career paths and use technology in a more effective way. And so we help to provide training for those programs. We help to connect students to the types of companies that have the same values that they have. And we continue to expand programs: our urban farming program, our freshwater technology program, our wastewater treatment program, our geothermal program. We have just a lot of programs that are focused on the types of careers that will support the focus on sustainability.
Mm-hmm. Give us a quick background check, if you will, of how Gateway got involved with Foxconn.
Sure, I'll be happy to. In fact, it was about 1 year ago, last May, when a delegation came to Wisconsin and wanted to visit a few locations, including Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, and the Janesville area. They then went over to visit Iowa, Ohio, and Michigan, and so on. And ultimately, we found out it was the company Foxconn, and they chose Racine County, as we know. But the very first visit that they had made, that time was called the Flying Eagle Project, was to Gateway's IMET Center. So we hosted the first delegation at the IMET Center out in Sturtevant. Had a chance to serve on a panel with them, including Chancellor Ford at UW-Parkside, talk about workforce development and what Gateway could do to help provide the types of skills that were necessary for an advanced manufacturing operation like that. And then we toured the IMET Center. And since that day, I've been fortunate enough to stay engaged with their teams. And for a while, about 4 months, we hosted 40 of their team members at the IMET Center as they did their initial planning and build out before they were able to move into their production facility out on the interstate currently. And through that entire process, we partnered to develop position descriptions, internships, and many of the employees that are currently working for Foxconn came through Gateway programming. They've also helped us design future programming, so we have new curriculum that we just announced last week in advanced manufacturing and supply chain management that will now be taught at METC in Milwaukee, and we're hoping at Waukesha County Tech as well, as we develop a regional talent pipeline to support the large number of employees that Foxconn is going to be hiring. But those skill sets cut across the board. So whether it's Amazon, Foxconn, Haribo, InSinkErator, Uline, they all have a similar demographic of the skills they want in advanced manufacturing and cybersecurity. So we think we put together a pretty solid platform that's going to serve for many, many companies for many years.
And as you look at those courses, as you look at this tie-in to the curriculum, I know there are a lot of new courses that are impacting the curriculum here at Gateway at both the high school level, the middle school level, and even the elementary school level. Maybe if you can talk a bit about that. I know that's these are things that have just been recently announced.
It became real for me about 4 months ago. I traveled with a delegation from Racine to Foxconn's facility in Osaka, Japan. So I had a chance to see it firsthand. What is advanced manufacturing automation, the industrial Internet of Things, liquid crystal technology, and what were the skills necessary to work in those environments? And I came back and I said, I've seen the future, everyone. We've got to step up our game a little bit. So we began to work with Foxconn to develop some skill sets around advanced manufacturing, the industrial Internet of Things, cybersecurity, IT, and have now put together a robust platform that's going to allow for associate degrees to meet what I'll call smart technician level, and that's how to really manipulate data to make equipment and machines more efficient. But to get there, you've got to start way back in elementary grade level. So we've partnered now. Currently this year, 8 elementary schools will be partnering in our new Kids Lab initiative. So electronics programs, 3D printing programs, design programs, CAD software programs, as early as the second grade. So we're providing teacher training, labs for those schools so that young people can get excited and engaged around design, creativity, and innovation. The middle school level, we continue to advance our focus on robotics, and we've got a great network of over 50 schools now that participate in our robotics competition, and they're mentored by college faculty, and it's just an exciting environment. And then high school, we've built out 4 new courses that are going to serve our high schools. We'll start training this summer, the teachers offering courses in the fall. All 4 of those courses lead to the new associate degrees that Gateway's put in place for advanced manufacturing. So these are courses in things like robotics with FANUC Robotics, a program in programmable logical controllers, the brains behind CNC machining, the industrial Internet of Things, how do machines talk to each other, things that we have not offered at the high school level before. So middle school and elementary is really important because by the time students get to turn 16, 17 years old, it's a whole new computer language that we're helping them understand that will lead toward great career paths for advanced manufacturing careers in smart industries.
The 8 elementary schools you mentioned, in which school districts are they?
So we spread them out throughout the entire 3 counties, so everyone has some activity in there. Kenosha's going to have several. Racine will have some as well, but Union Grove and Burlington. And so we want to make sure that every school district has an opportunity to do this. It's our first pilot effort. We bought 1 extra set that we can put in our mobile trainer and take it to any elementary school. So we don't want to limit it just to the 8 that we're putting in. We have a 9th one that we're going to deploy, and then we have a 10th one that's on campus so that we can do teacher training.
The article that was in the Kenosha News this past week, actually last Friday, the headline, Foxconn broadens talent network with a challenge. And this is about Smart City, $1 million, a way to challenge students for in the area of housing, manufacturing, human resources, other critical areas. And it's involving a Gateway. It's involving the community colleges, the technical colleges, as well as the Wisconsin Association of Independent Colleges and the University of Wisconsin system. Maybe talk a bit about this since this was something that is fairly new now.
Yeah, I'll be happy to. It was an exciting day, and I was honored to represent Gateway and the Wisconsin Technical College system. A big celebration over at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and Chancellor Ford hosted the celebration, and Mark Hogan, the Secretary for Wisconsin's Economic Development Corporation, was there to talk about the important role that innovation and ideas have to our state. Mike Lovell, the President and CEO over at Marquette University, talked about the private college sector, and then I had a chance to represent the 2-year technical college sector, and it was all in celebration of Alan Young's announcement, who is the U.S. Strategic Coordinator for Foxconn. They're putting $1 million prize money on the table to engage faculty and students in creative and innovative ideas around what smart technologies might mean for the communities in which we live in. So in his words, it's about, you know, smart cars, autonomous driving vehicles. How will we interact with the cyber world? What can we do as innovators, including students that are included in our schools, to bring those best ideas to life? So it might be an art exhibit. It might be a scientific discovery. It might be a prototype of a new product. Lots of different ways that students can become engaged in these efforts. And I loved his quote about that we're going where we don't need roads anymore. And he was referencing Back to the Future and the flying car. And so that's what this is all about, helping people spur innovation ideas and what are some of the solutions that we might all come together around that could potentially be a part of the social impact of a company like Foxconn.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at all this, when you look at all the involvement with Foxconn and the direct impact that it has on Gateway, what has been the overall response from the faculty and staff, and then how much are they involved in all this as far as the development of curriculum and the involvement of all these programmatic areas?
Yeah, I've only heard positive response. Our team here at Gateway has been very engaged in any new development in our community, whether it's, you know, an expansion of an existing company, whether it's developing, you know, some community-based programming in the inner city, or a great new company opportunity, Foxconn, you know, Kennel Manufacturing, others that might come to this area. So direct impact, it's an everyday effort. So Greg Chapman's been helping to write all the curriculum for the Foxconn training programs. Anne Wynott and her team have been working on the grant material that goes along with it to get additional support and funding for the program. Matt Janison and the Workforce Solutions team is putting together kind of the structure of what the facility will look like and how is that going to be impacted by the types of training needs that we have. And really, just Nancy Chapman's been working on getting all of the state approvals for the curriculum. So across the board, everyone's been actively involved. I know that it's not just about what we're doing tomorrow for the manufacturing side, because we opened a new partnership with Big Step, which is a pre-apprenticeship training. So we're building out construction trades, and Cindy and Jennings over on the Racine campus is working with Big Step, and Steve Whitmire and the civil engineering program partnering with Big Step. So whether it's construction trades, manufacturing trades, or what we all know, when you bring 13,000 people to your community, you know, you need a lot of other services, culinary programs, hotel management programs. Mm-hmm. You know, so we anticipate continued growth in all areas of our development here at the mm-hmm. college.
And my last question, as you roam around all the campuses, and I know you do, and I know you talk to a lot of students, what kind of responses and reactions have you gotten from students about all of this?
Students are the best. You know, they are so optimistic about their future, and they came here for a specific purpose, right? To develop their skills, to get the job that they've always wanted, the type of job that's going to pay enough to support themselves and their families going forward. And so when we introduce the internships at Foxconn, and they're all paid internships, and many of them now led to full-time jobs, I mean, that message gets around pretty quickly that that's an organization that I want to pay attention to and get excited about. But I think what really inspires a lot of students is that, you know, this is a technology and innovation-driven company. So this is really entrepreneurialism at its best. What is the latest, greatest product that they're producing? Liquid crystal technology. But what might it be in the future? Might be autonomous driving vehicles, might be drone technology, might be a medical technology that we don't even know about today. And so there's commercial aspects, there's scientific aspects, there's production aspects, there's all kinds of different ways a student can look at this. And we've been pretty aggressive at Gateway to provide the types of environments that will allow that to happen. And this just amplifies it to a new level in which now students can not only help create the platform for the right skills, but they can be a part of the innovative cycle and be a part of Foxconn's creativity. So I think everyone's looking at this as a real big benefit for the region and for the entire ecosystem of Southeast mm-hmm. Wisconsin.
And I said that was my last question, yeah. But you know me, I always have a follow-up to that. If you had to evaluate what all this means, not only for Gateway, but for our entire region and for the state, as far as the involvement with Foxconn on the coolness level, like just how cool this is, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it?
Oh, it's definitely a 10. I mean, it's already been recognized as the top economic development project, not only in Wisconsin, but probably across the nation, a $10 billion investment in a liquid crystal, high-tech, state-of-the-art automation center is going to be really unique and very special. It will attract the world. There have been several foreign companies that have already come to visit to see where they could have a part of this whole thing. I think they just recently announced $100 million of initial investment to do road construction and the initial build-out. So, this is an echo effect that's going to last for the next 10 years, if not longer, as far as just the physical capacity to build it out. Then we're looking at long term. This is the type of technology that continues to evolve all the time. So the products will change, the skill sets will change, you know, the types of people that are attracted to these jobs will change. That'll keep our community really vibrant, and I think it'll keep it one of the not only one of the most talent attractive, but one of the most creative cities in the country.
So that coolness level of 10 is pretty darn cool, isn't it?
It's very cool. I'm so proud to be working on this and to be a part of the community and, you know, to represent Gateway. I mean, this is just another great notch in the history of Gateway to be able to provide the types of services to help a company like Foxconn locate, build, increase talent capacity, and actually help our communities to evolve. So,
well, I want to thank you, as always, for being my guest here on Education Matters. I look forward to seeing how all this goes and for having you as a guest sometime during the next academic school year.
Great. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
And we continue now with segment two of Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. My guest in this next segment is Dr. James Ryan. And when I did this interview with Dr. Ryan back in 2013, he was professor of law at the University of Virginia School of Law. And also, Dr. Ryan was former clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist of the U.S. Supreme Court. We talked about his book, 5 Miles Away, A World Apart, One City, Two Schools, and the Story of Educational Opportunity in Modern America. And now in 2018, Dr. Ryan is Dean of the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Jim Ryan, welcome to Education Matters.
Thanks very much, Steve. I'm delighted to be here.
Before we get into a discussion of your book, what the book is all about, and a discussion about issues related to how schools are dealing with issues of segregation. There was an article that is on your website, part of the University of Virginia website, and it's titled Opening the Schoolhouse Door. And one of the things that caught my eye was, it talks about in this article about you that neither of your parents attended college, but both of your parents recognized the value of education and urged their children, your siblings, to take full advantage. And then there's a quote from you, and it says, "Education has transformed my life and my own experience and has made me intensely interested in figuring out ways to allow others disadvantaged by our educational system to have an experience more like my own." And I was wondering if you might just kind of elaborate on that and why education is so important to you and how you've been able to involve that concept and philosophy in your life as an educator and as a professor.
Oh, sure. Well, like I said in that article that you quoted, my parents from day one stressed the importance of education, and I grew up in a small blue-collar town in northern New Jersey, and the schools were very solid, not overwhelmingly good, but quite solid, and I felt like I had a very decent opportunity to get a good education. And when I was in high school, the kids from a neighboring town came to our town for high school because our town was too small to support a high school on its own, and their town was too small to support a high school, and so we combined forces. And the kids from that town were quite affluent. And I think some of my belief in at least socioeconomic integration comes from that experience, because talking to those kids and their parents made me realize that there was an entire world out there of higher education that I was sort of aware of, but not completely aware of. And my father, like you mentioned, did not go to college, couldn't understand why, given that I had done pretty well in high school, I couldn't go anywhere I wanted. And the guidance counselor at my high school said, "Well, if I worked hard, I could go to the state college, Rutgers." in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to know, well, why couldn't I go anywhere I wanted, given that I'd been doing really well, and said, you know, I think you should talk to the parent of one of your friends who had gone to Princeton. And sure enough, I talked to him, and he said, I just don't understand why you shouldn't apply to a place like Princeton. Long story short, I applied to a bunch of places and ended up going to Yale. And that experience, more than any other, completely changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that everyone needs to go to Yale to experience the power of education. But my own experience, to me, is living proof of the importance and the transformative power of education. And that just started me thinking about how crucial education is in shaping individual opportunities. And if you look around this country, some kids don't have much of a chance. I mean, I didn't have a gold-plated school, but I had a decent chance and ended up doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some kids just never have that chance. And so I'd always been interested in the issue. And then when I went to law school, there were two cases that stood out in my mind. One was Milliken versus Bradley, mm-hmm. and the other one was San Antonio versus Rodriguez. And as you know, I'm sure, Steve, in Milliken versus Bradley, the court halted desegregation at the line between city schools and suburban schools. And in San Antonio versus Rodriguez, the court upheld unequal funding systems. So some schools are funded at much higher levels than others. And I thought, in combination, those two decisions really put some schools behind the eight ball. And so I became interested in education law and policy from reading those two cases, and that sort of set me off in the direction of studying law and education ever since.
But let's talk about your book, 5 Miles Away, A World Apart, One City, Two Schools, and the Story of Educational Opportunity in America. It's published by Oxford University Press. And my question is, in your book, you talk about, in particular, there are two schools in the Richmond, Virginia area, Freeman and Thomas Jefferson High School. They're obviously 5 miles apart, hence the title of the book. What brought you to the conclusion that although these two schools were very close geographically, that these schools were in fact, or are still in fact, a world apart?
Right. Well, I chose the two schools because I wanted to pick a city school and a suburban school and use those schools as examples of the broader themes that the book talks about, which are largely about the differences between opportunities at urban schools and suburban schools. And in terms of the differences, some are really obvious and some are more subtle but just as important. The obvious difference is in the student body. Thomas Jefferson, or TJ as it's known, which is in the city of Richmond, is predominantly minority, mostly African American, and predominantly poor. Freeman, by contrast, is predominantly white and predominantly middle income. So as soon as you walk into the building, you notice that it's two very different populations. The second thing that you notice are the facilities. TJ is an old and very beautiful building from the outside, but inside, it's showing some wear. It hasn't been updated in a while. The hallways are sort of dark. There is a metal detector that you have to walk through. There are police that walk through the halls. Freeman, by contrast, it's not spectacular by any stretch of the imagination. It's sort of a typical school, but was bright on the inside, no metal detectors, no police. And so it's a very different feel in terms of the two schools. Those are the obvious differences. The more subtle but nonetheless important differences relate back to what we were just talking about in terms of expectations. Mm-hmm. I sat in on a number of classes, and at TJ, all eyes tend to be focused on the standards of learning, which are both the standards and the tests to see whether the standards are being met. Confusingly, standards of learning are used to describe both of them. But the SOLs, as they're called for short, are the year-end tests that students have to pass in order to be considered proficient. If you go to TJ around the testing time, all eyes are on the test. Everyone's concerned about the test. And TJ has done fairly well. If you go to Freeman, the tests are downplayed. And everyone that you talk to says, we fully expect our students are going to pass these tests. These tests are very basic. And we expect them to go well beyond the test. And it hits you that this whole standards and testing regime that we've set up, especially through the No Child Left Behind Act, rests on an illusion of equality in that we're not bringing all students up to very high standards. The tests in Virginia are quite basic. What we're doing is papering over differences by saying, all you need to do is meet this pretty low benchmark and you'll be considered proficient. Never mind the fact that at another school, they're going well beyond that benchmark. And so the key difference, to me anyway, was where the bar is set. And the bar is set at the SOLs in TJ, and the bar is set well beyond the SOLs at Freeman.
Mm-hmm. As we talk now about these differences, let me just ask you just a point-blank question.
Yeah.
Brown versus the Board of Education was decided back in 1954.
Right.
And even though it didn't absolutely, totally overturn Plessy versus Ferguson,
right,
it certainly addressed the major right issues about separate but equal facilities being unconstitutional. But have we gone back to our schools in the United States being segregated once again? And I know there will be a lot of people who will challenge not only my question, but probably your answer.
Yeah. Well, so I'll either please everyone or tick everyone off by saying yes and no. It would be wrong to say that we're going back to segregation if by that you mean state-enforced mm-hmm. segregation.
Mm-hmm.
Brown was about intentional segregation, laws in the South that required white and black kids to go to separate schools. Those laws were declared unconstitutional in Brown, and we're not going back to that era. There's just no chance. And so I think it's important to acknowledge what Brown accomplished. It was very important that those laws be set aside, and it's something that we should be proud of as a country, that we overcame that. And I don't think that there's any chance that we would go back to that sort of enforced apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
That said, as a matter of fact, are most black kids going to school with other minority students rather than white students? Yes, that's just the fact. Most minority students go to majority minority schools. They're not all minority the way that they were during the era before Brown versus Board of Education. But I think a lot of the reason why people say our schools are quote-unquote resegregating is because they look around and they see schools like TJ in the city of Richmond, which are 80% minority, and that's mostly African-American with a few Hispanic and Asian students, and they think, well, what exactly did Brown accomplish? And so if you think of segregation eliminating segregation as creating schools that are stably integrated, then we haven't eliminated segregation. If you think of segregation as intentionally enforced separation of white and black students, then we have. And it's in that different definition of segregation or desegregation that you I think get different views on the subject. But make no mistake about it, our schools are still very segregated in terms of being separated on the basis of race and on the basis of income.
Sure. And Gary Orfield, and I've worked with Gary, and I know that you know him as well.
Sure.
He's director of the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. He does not mince words. He says that separate is still unequal. And he says, depending on where you stand, the drift back to segregation may be obvious or it may be entirely invisible. Many white students attend schools that are overwhelmingly white, and those schools are actually seeing an increase in diversity. Orfield goes on to say, we have the irony that white students can feel that their educational experience is more integrated when, in fact, the level of segregation nationwide has increased. The question that I pose, are we returning to segregation? Maybe the question should have been, have we ever left segregated schools?
Yeah, right. I think that's the right question. I don't think that there was ever really a golden era where we had a lot of really integrated schools. And even during the 70s and 80s, when levels of integration were higher than they are now, Not many, or I would say a significant number of those schools were still undergoing a transition. So, you know, what you get the cynic's definition of integration, which is just the transition of a school from mostly white to mostly black. So I think you're right to ask, you know, when have we had a period nationwide of stably integrated schools? And the answer is we haven't.
Mm-hmm.
In different areas of the country, there have been higher levels of integration than there are now. And so I think in the South in particular, the resegregation that Gary Orfield talks about is very real in terms of going backward.
When you talk about the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, I guess we can't discuss that without talking about a compelling interest factor, and you know, a compelling government interest.
Right.
And I know you talked about that in a paper that you wrote back in 2002, Race Discrimination in Education. You talk specifically that in the Brown decision that the court did set out to dismantle legally segregated school systems.
Right. You know, as you know, Steve, in Brown 2, the case that mm-hmm. followed the following year about the proper remedy, it's famously vague about the remedy that's required mm-hmm. for previously segregated schools. And in some ways, this is what creates the controversy that lingers right up through the Parents Involved case out of Seattle and the Meredith case out of Kentucky. And namely, it's a fight over what is Brown about, what was Brown about. And the conservatives on the court, like a lot of legal and political conservatives off of the court, think Brown stands solely for the idea that you should never, under any circumstances, take race into account when assigning kids to school. And others look at Brown and say, that's really turning Brown upside down. Brown wasn't just about not using race. It was about not using race to segregate students. And so if race is taken into account in an effort to integrate students, that's a whole different kettle of fish, and is completely consistent with Brown because, so the argument would continue, Brown was really about bringing kids together under the same roof so that there would be, as Justice Brennan put it in Green versus New Kent County, a case after Brown, not a white school or a black school, but just school.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the U.S. Supreme Court would rule today on the original Brown v. Board case?
That's a really fascinating question. It's really impossible to ask because it's hard to imagine this court in today's world where there was still segregation, right? It's hard to mm-hmm. it's hard to picture these justices in today's world and imagine that segregation is still allowed. I would like to think that they would strike it down, but I think that they would strike it down in large part because the court is often moved to suppress outliers. That is to say, we have this image, I think, of the court acting really heroically, and Brown is usually Exhibit A in that case. But if you look at the court over time, the court more often than not follows public opinion rather than shapes it.
Mm-hmm.
And Brown is actually not a bad example of this. Sure, Brown was very controversial in the South, but nationwide, a poll shortly after Brown found a nationwide majority in favor of it. And so I would have to think that had Brown not been decided, the politics created that started by World War II, most importantly, would have continued and segregation would have been less and less and less acceptable. And so either a decision like Brown wouldn't have been necessary, or if it had been necessary, it would have been necessary for even fewer states than were involved in the original Brown decision. And I would bet my bottom dollar that a court today would say that intentional segregation is contrary to the Constitution.
Jim Ryan, thank you so much for joining us on Education Matters this
morning.
No, it was
my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Frederick Hess from the American Enterprise Institute, who's been a guest on my show several times, says James Ryan has penned a searching and scholarly tour de force on the subject of race, community, and educational opportunity. I would urge you to read this book. It's an outstanding book. Jim, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
And this has been Education Matters here on WGTD-HD. and I have been your host this week, Steve Brown. In our first segment, my guest was Dr. Brian Albrecht, president at Gateway Technical College, and we talked about what's going on at Gateway here in 2017-18 academic year, and also all the exciting things going on with Foxconn. In segment two, my guest was Dr. James Ryan, who's currently dean of the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and we talked about his book, 5 Miles Away, A World Apart. For Education Matters here on WGTD HD, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn.